This is May 25th, 1980, Taos, New Mexico, and we're having a session with Bartholomew. Good morning, Bartholomew.
Good morning. I would like to speak a little on a subject that some of you might not find of interest, but I feel others of you will. And therefore, those of you that don't, please bear with me. The spiritual journey, the search, the victory, all these words, can become so dry, so abstract, so intellectual that I see something unfortunate happening to some of you. Not necessarily in this room, but certainly in some of the letters that we receive and so forth. And it is this. If the search for freedom has become intellectual for you, then it is dead. Anything of the mind is dead. It is past, it has no meaning, it has no relevancy, it is dead debris, and you need not ever be concerned with it again. The only thing that I see that will keep you alive in your search is to keep the mystery of what you seek ever before you. Now let me explain that. When the mind says mystery, it says, I'm going to go and find it out. I'm going to read a book about it. I'm going to have the inner mysteries, the outer mysteries, the faraway mysteries, the ultimate mysteries, the past mysteries, the future mysteries, and so on. This is all intellectual game. Do you understand? The mysteries then means something that is written down in a book or something that some occult leader knew is going to pass on the power to you and so on. All right. Has nothing to do with divine mystery. And I would like to, if I could, put life into your mystery today, because it is the elixir that keeps you on your journey. If anything stops a seeker, it is when the elixir of mystery goes out and the journey becomes mundane, intellectual, ordinary, or emotional. Or emotional. Now, what do I mean? For those of you who have thought at all about it and have even partly believed what I have said to you, you must think one of two things. Bartholomew is mad, or there is a mystery here. Two choices. If I tell you that this world is an illusion and you do not find that mysterious, then you probably don't believe it. Do you hear me? You cannot have it. Oh, yes, I see. This world is illusion. Oh, how very ordinary. Is that an ordinary statement? If I tell you, you are not your mind and you are not your body, and you tell me, oh, yes, I understand, that's ordinary, then I'm saying you've missed it. You've missed it. You've missed it. Why is God mysterious? And even when you so-called find God, he will be even more mysterious. And let me tell you why. Because he is not static, dead, and finished. Mystery means you do not yet understand. I don't mean mental. Your being does not yet awaken. And when it begins to awaken, the mystery gets greater and greater. Do you think the mystery gets less when you are in touch with this? If so, then why bother? Why bother? If at the end of all of your struggling, all of your trying, you find the eternal mystery, and then say, ho-hum, then why bother? At least now you're not saying ho-hum, so stay here. And this represents something that I think is a stumbling block for many. There is an illusory feeling that when you find the divine, that it's all over. And therefore you enjoy the game of finding rather than the end of it, which is the finding. You like the movement, but you are afraid to reach for fear that when you reach, the fun is out of the game. My friends, that is about the farthest thing from the truth that you could ever think. The moment you taste of the true mystery, you then begin to participate as a participant, not as a seeker, but as a participant in the ever-expanding mystery that you now know yourself to belong to. And why is it mysterious? It's because it's creative. You begin to work with a painting. Do you know how it's going to end if you're a master painter?
Nonsense! It hasn't been painted yet!
If you're a composer, do you know how it will end? If it is, then somebody else has composed it before you. What you are saying is that in this instant, the movement and the motion and the divine creativity is here and something comes of it. A necklace. Music. A new way to do something. A garden. A life. Whatever. Out of it comes the moment. Does that not seem mysterious to you? It does to me. Still, as many years, as you would call them, as I have participated in this divine experiment of creation and extending of the divine life, I find it absolutely mysterious, and I understand it not. And I hope I never do. Because to understand is to stop. When you understand something, you are finished with it. You put it in the compartment that says, oh yes, now I understand. Plop. Dead. So, the mystery that I ask you to remember is that if you believe even three of the statements that I have made, ask yourself, does not that seem mysterious? Does that not seem mysterious to you? And if you get gripped with the mystery to such an extent, then it brings about a very deep courage. Do you understand? When things are dry and intellectual and mechanical, the mystery is gone and the juices are empty and courage is weak. But when the mystery begins to be born, then when that mystery being born comes the wonder of it and comes the courage. I don't mean brazen, brash, pushy, dynamic ego power. I mean courage. And you know the difference well. Without mystery, my friends, you do not have courage. Because without mystery, it is so awfully ordinary. Your whole lives, if you would be honest, are mostly awfully ordinary. With peaks upwards and peaks downwards. But most of the time, my dear friends, utterly ordinary. If you think that's the life divine, then you and I do not think alike. If you would like a visualization of the life divine and how it is to participate in that, it is the closest, perhaps, that I can come to. It is the knowing within your being at all times and the feeling of and tasting of and being alive to motion. Motion. Moving motion. That exhilarates, that words I cannot come with. Enlivens their whole being. And each moment, whether you're doing nothing, whether you are simply sitting or standing on one foot or whatever you're doing, is absolutely wondrous. And you've done nothing. And then you do something and it's no different than the moment that you did nothing. It's all the same because here, in this area that is you, that you call yourself, and extending outside is aliveness. And that is what I want to tell you. The mystery is life. I'm not talking about mental life, intellectual life, emotional life. I'm talking about life. That same power that creates a growth out of the ground. Do you not consider that a mystery? If you've lost that, why do you look at children and say, to be childlike is wondrous? Why? What do they have? They look at something and they go, oh! And where is that with you? Where is that with you? Everything can be like that, simply. You don't have to wait for freedom to participate in the mystery. You do not. All you have to do is wake up to the fact that somehow, don't you think it's mysterious, that somewhere you were plopped down on a particular planet at a particular time and said, go. Go. Go and do. The whole process is absolutely mysterious. The more mundane you make it, the more intellectual, the heavier, the drearier, the more you're going to miss. And the problem with proceeding on the yoni path is that it can turn you into a dead mental machine. It can be misused. This is why they say the bhakti, the love path, is the safer path, because you either know if you're feeling love, if you're not. But in the intellectual yoni path, you can be led astray. So to those of you who are participating in that path, I ask you particularly to be aware of this. Do not allow yourself to get turned on to a frequency that you think is detachment, when actually it is turning your back on dynamic energies. Both paths represent one thing. If you are there within your being, you will feel alive in some way. Correct? Aliveness is there. Undefined, can't talk about it, can't draw a picture of it, can't share it with the wife, but it's there. Aliveness. And with that aliveness comes the wonderful capacity to not give, to not give a damn how one's life goes. So it goes to the right, it goes to the right. So it goes to the left, it goes to the left. Why doesn't it matter? Because there are mysteries both directions. Mystery is not only one directional. If you are participating in mystery, everywhere you turn your head, mystery is present. If you are not participating in mystery, then no matter where you look, you will see nothing but death. My friends, you look on death every day. Death is not one event that happens at the end of a lot of other events. It happens constantly. Death, death, death to hopes, death to dreams, death to this life, death to that life, death to relationships, death to plants, death, whatever. It is a planet of death. At the same time, it is a planet of absolute life, ongoing, ever-present, ever-pulsating life. Which are you going to participate in? It is a choice. Again, we have to return to you, to your own being. How do you choose? And how do you know if you've chosen? I will give you a hallmark. I love you very much. I will give you a hallmark. If as you proceed through the moments of your day and you sense something, you begin to sense, don't think, my God, friends, don't think. Just sense. Something's moving this vehicle. Something's pushing it along the way. Something's here. Don't think. Don't say, oh, it's God, and forget about it. Because that's what you do. If you say, oh, it's God, you will forget about it. Why? Because now you've figured it out. You know, you all know what God is, right? Wrong. Wrong. But that is what your mind does. Oh, yes, it's God. Plop. This is why I hesitate to talk about masters. Because if we say, you feel a presence, and it's, oh, it's my master, plop. Past tense. My master, and it's past. Because we know about masters. Do you know about masters? I sincerely doubt that you know about masters. But it's in the past, plop. All right. Mystery is aliveness. Mystery must be alive. Because a mystery is something that has not yet unfolded itself. And the wonder of the divine is it's eternally, extendingly, wondrously mysterious. Those of you who think that once you know, and that's it, please quit. You'll be much happier staying here, playing the game of seeking rather than the game of finding. Because there is no end. There is no end. Certain things change, certain illusions drop away. Oh, yes. Don't be misled. There will be other mysteries to unfold. And one, if you ask me what this planet is about, would somebody ask me that question?
Bartholomew, what is this planet all about?
Thank you very much. This is the planet where mystery becomes meaningful. This is the planet where mystery becomes meaningful. This planet is filled with the capacity to understand mystery. Look at your literature. Your literature is filled with mystery. It's filled with myths. It's filled with all of those, what are they called, Mr. Jungian's...
Archetypes?
Thank you. Archetypal, whatever word. Business. All of that. All these are mysteries. And man will hover around those and try to interpret and try to analyze. This is where the I Ching comes in and the tarot and all of this business. The Rosicrucians, all of this. This is the mystery planet. It's where mystery becomes meaningful. But if you stay on this planet, you're going to continually be fogged down in what mystery really is because you have made one mistake. You think mystery has something to do with unlocking a secret in a material sense or in an intellectual sense. Finding out the mysteries of the past, you will be finding out the past. Now, the process of going to find out the mysteries in the past might bring you to life. Do you understand what I'm saying? Those who go out in search of mysteries think they're going for one reason. They're going for quite a different reason. They're not going for what they think. They're going for the hope that their own inner mystery will begin to take on power, that they will be able to begin to grow within their own personal mystery, because you yourselves are absolutely mysterious. You are the ultimate mystery. You are. And yet, you look on each other as mundane, ordinary, and hardly worth thinking about. That's how you view each other. Because who are you thinking about most of the time? Why, shall we reveal the secret? The reason other people don't think about you so much is because they're thinking about themselves. That's why. All right. So let's use this capacity to be self-absorbed unto nausea and do something about it. And now, let us pretend that there is a true mystery here, a real mystery within you. Now, practical, what am I saying? Practically saying. How can you get up in the morning, ordinary, if a part of your being says, today I might begin to really taste of the mystery? How can you have an ordinary day if you know that the simple rising up out of your bed and placing one foot and then one foot is going to perhaps lead to the mystery? Don't you see that everything you do during the day, whatever it may be, can be the moment when the mystery begins to reveal itself? Not to be understood. Mystery is not understood and put away in shoeboxes. Mystery increases. Mystery builds. Mystery becomes more and more what it is, not less. Most people on the earth plane try to unlock the mysteries of soil, atoms, what can I say, fabrics, ideas, art, so on. You understand? And fine, that's why I say this is the planet of the mystery. If you do not awaken to one fact, then you will be locked into this planetary experience. I've said before, and I must repeat, although some of you do not like for me to talk this way, I must say it, there are other planets. And these other planets offer a different kind of understanding than this one does. Some are higher, and if you wish to use these words, and some are lower, which means that some will deal with other parts of your awareness and some will deal with others. It's your choice. But again, I say, you're here, and why are you here? It's because you sense a mysterious something, and yet you are using your conditioned mind and body to unlock a mystery that your mind and body do not contain. Your mind and body contain the essence of it, but your mind and body do not contain the key. Your mind and body are not where the answers. You can examine this body until the most minute particle of matter presents itself, and you will not be free. You can look at the endless tracks of your mind, looking at all your intellectual garbage from here till the time you were first created until the time you will last be created, and you will not be free. But this is what this planet is all about. You're looking in the wrong place. But I will tell you this. If you are looking for the key, it is here. You don't have to go to another planet to find the key. And this is where I take exception to great many of the religious orders that I see awash on the earth plane today. They state that you cannot find it here. that somehow you have to travel. How, I don't know you're going to do this, but somehow you have to travel to another world, travel to another galaxy, travel to another area of consciousness, travel here, travel there, buy your tickets, do all of these things. And I say, bah humbug, I don't understand that. The problem is here. The reason the key is here is that there is no problem, never has been, could never be. The question only remains, do you participate in the mystery, or do you participate in the mundaneness? Mystery goes in all directions. Mind goes linearly. Take your choice. So how do you do this practically? Let's be practical. Number one. If you are bored, it is because you have lost the mystery. You have forgotten that the mystery is ever present, ever waiting to be revealed. And I do not think it is too much to ask any of you sitting in this room to make a concerted effort to ground yourself deeply so that the mystery, as it reveals itself, will have somebody there to watch it. The mystery goes on endlessly. You've got your TV set off. That's the only problem. That's the only problem. There is no great problem. You know, you don't have to set 18 dials at exactly the right number, and then the mystery will be revealed. You don't have to do anything, but there is one thing that will bring it close, which is, one, I ask you now to take me in all divine seriousness. You are absolutely mysterious. Two, that mystery can be revealed to you. How? Watch for it. How? Wait for it. How? Be aware of it. It's here. We always go back to the same thing because there's only one place to go back to. And how many gaseous tapes we have to listen to go back to the same point, which is this. It is there and it is yours, and claim it and get about your business. Do not become intellectual and mundane. You will not find the divine extension in the mundane. By that I mean, if you think that life is something like trudging through life, I've got to get through this day, I've got to get through tomorrow, someday things are going to be better, my friends, no. Things are never going to be better because everything is here now. How could anything be better? How could anything be better than what is already existing? Those are foolish words that your ego throws out in order to keep you hanging around for another round of mystery solving. Do you want it? Another round? Or have you had enough? For those of you that have had enough, then start watching. You do not have to wait to the end of a book to find out the mystery. You don't have to wait to the end of a life to find out a mystery. Now. Are there any gimmicks? No. Just be here. Be alive here. Be awake here. Wake up here. Now. Here. Awake. You know what that means. I don't have to talk about it. You know. Either asleep or you're awake. You're sitting in the same chair. Are you awake or are you asleep? You know the difference. People say, how do I wake up? I say, how do you not wake up? You know well how to wake up. You know if you're asleep. If you're asleep, you're thinking about yourself and other people and what you're going to do and what you're going to eat and how you're going to do this and are they going to like me? Are they going to hate me? And da-da-da-da, on. You're asleep. Your mind has glued into a channel that is dead. Dead. But if you are alive, you will know it. It's not hard. But the choice is simple. It's easier to be dead. It's just easier. You know why it's easier? You're used to it. Do not underestimate habit patterns, my friends. And your habit patterns have really been established. You're used to being dead. So, are there any questions?
Bartholomew, when you speak of mystery, is this sort of like viewing each day, each moment, with joyous expectancy?
If one could do that, the mystery would soon reveal itself. But the problem is that keeping joyous expectancy at a high pitch is very difficult for most people because they fall into boredom.
Well, then there might be the problem that the expectant might become realized and then you're at the end of your rope again.
Precisely. That's exactly what I'm saying. And I think this is a very profound point that should be listened to. You don't really realize how your minds work, but in this regard they do. For example, many times I see on the earth plane in regards to such a simple thing as love relationships. One is afraid to really get, you know, too involved in a love relationship because you're afraid that once you get involved in the love relationship that it's going to end. You know, if you get too involved, if you get too close, well, then all the mystery is going to go out of it. You have it in your language. You know, married people can't really love each other because the mystery's gone out. I mean, I hear it constantly. The mystery's gone out of my relationship. What does this mean? This means that you've been with a person long enough so that their habit patterns and your habit patterns, mental, physical, and emotional, are known to each other and boredom has set in. And you are afraid because you have misidentified the God self as a blown-up person, the jolly green giant of the skies, that relationship also is going to die. That if you get too close, do not underestimate this. You are afraid that if you get too close to that knowledge, that it is going to turn into the same cardboard that your love affairs have turned into on this earth plane. You have not made the difference, distinction. You think what you are having between yourselves is love? Nonsense. With all due respect. Nonsense. Call it what you will, but let us not confuse it with what we are talking about, which is a completely different power. But the fear is there. All of you in this room have been disillusioned in love affairs, one time or another. A love affair that hasn't turned out to be precisely. You've made adjustments and adapted and, you know, worked it so that it, you know, it's still glued together. But it didn't meet with that first wondrous expectation.
Isn't it funny that we call it disillusioned? That's bad.
Yes, right. And it's the opposite, you see. Yes. Yes, I understand your point. But this is the thing to understand, that your mind loves to misidentify and thereby keep you trapped. If your mind says, oh, well, I don't want to really participate in this God thing because, oh, my God, it's going to turn to cardboard partway down the road, and it's much better for me to keep thinking about how wonderful it's going to be. People do it all the time in their love affairs. They do it with their children. Well, I don't want to get too involved with my children because if I get too involved, oh dear, then you know it's going to turn into trouble and I'll have to deal with this problem and that. I'll just keep it away here. Same way with friendships. Well, let's not get too close because if we get too close, we're going to really know each other. And if we really know each other, we're not going to like each other anymore. This is the overriding experience of most human beings. You can adjust, adapt, and accommodate your relationship so that you're bound together for years and years. This does not mean that that is divine love that glues you together. It is easy to get your neuroses so that they mesh. There's no problem with doing that, as long as one of you is willing to capitulate to the other. But that isn't what I'm talking about. I'm talking about something quite different. Do not misidentify. A hallmark of a divine experience is that once it comes, its mystery never leaves you. And when you reflect back upon it, again, you feel the wonder of, the delight of, the joy of. Compare that to your dead relationships. Do you have that same feeling? Think of husbands and wives past, loves past, so forth. Do you have that same feeling? Look back on them. Does that feeling fill you? Oh, how wonderful. Do you feel inundated with the joy and the upliftment that must have been a part of that relationship at one time? Do you identify with that? It's a rare human that would do such. Do not misidentify. God is not the Jolly Green Giant. God is not a projection of a human being with attributes the same as, only greater than. And this is what people think God is. Just like you, only bigger. Just like you, only vaster. Well, that kind of a God, my friends, would terrify me. Do you really want this God of yours to have your attributes magnified? Think about your attributes, my friends. Think about the thoughts that you hold one for the other. Think about the anger and the disappointment and the rage and the jealousy and the tears and the recriminations and the... Do you want all of that, only bigger? Not me. If you start that, I'm finished. I don't want any part of that. That kind of a God power, no. I don't want it. I don't know what you would do with it. You're talking about forces so vast that, well, they are unspeakable. Please be aware of what the mind is doing to you. There is no mystery to a relationship between man and wife after a while. I don't mean there isn't care or concern. That's not what I mean. I mean a kind of a mystery that stirs the deepest part of one's being. And this is why people like Carl Jung took such hold, because they began to stir the mystery that's going on. My one complaint about the churches, for one example, the Roman Catholic churches, they have taken a mystery and explained it away until it is so boring that you can't bear to read through the books. The mystery of the communion began as a holy mystery that one was going to participate personally, totally and fully in one's own being between this force and these symbols and one's own being. But they couldn't content themselves with that, and they had to explain it. And now you know exactly what it means to take Holy Communion. It's all written down and finished. Oh, I understand. Dead. Dead, dead, dead. And so are all of you dead as long as you start continuing living in these past things. They're dead. You don't know what God is. You don't. So why not admit it and just say, let's find out. Is that not a mystery to you? If you ask me the hard part of this job of mine, it is this. It is as if I see all of you surrounded in a sea of wondrous, enlightened mystery, bubbling with new color, new shimmer, new sheen, new movement, new possibility, new potential, new everything, and you're standing there thusly, my friends, and your eyes are closed, and your hands are over your ears, and you say, I don't see anything. Of course you don't see anything. If your eyes are closed and your hands are over your ears, how can you see or hear anything? But it's here. You see, it's just the mistaken thought that it is not here. All right. Take me at my word. See if I speak truth. I may be lying to you. I am not, but I could be. I tell you it's here. I see every breath you breathe bringing it into you. If you could see yourselves, you would understand. If you could see the very breath of life moving in, undulating out, in, out, in. You're all worried about my deformity. This is too fat. This is too short. This is broken. This is this. This is that. Whatever, whatever. All these problems, whatever. And all the time I'm listening to you say all these things, do you know what I'm seeing? You know what I'm seeing. Bright, brilliant, multicolored, multidimensional, multi-universal particles moving, enlightening, enjoying, sparkling, dancing. And you're saying, oh, this foot is problem and my this and my that, and I have these problems, and I'm thinking, oh dear, oh dear. We are not seeing the same thing at all. And what is the difference between you and me? that I am some wonderful, far-reaching, vast something. Nonsense. There is no difference between us. None. The barriers are on your side. Play if you will. But I will not play with you. That is the one game I will not play, which is that I am wise and you are stupid, that I know and that you do not, that I am wonderful and you are worms. Play if you will. I will not participate. If you are a worm, then I am wormness with you. And if you are wise, then I am wiseness with you. I do not care. The hallmark of divine presence, it is there at all times and in all places, under all circumstances. If you're asking me to say, am I saying I am God, I would like to make a great correction on this tape before I am greatly misunderstood. I will say only one thing about this. Anyone who has achieved understanding of extended, universal, dynamic, creative living is a part of that, and thus says that they are part of the flow, and they would be very misunderstood if they said that they were God, because they would laugh at that statement. The fact that they say they are God means somehow that they are the totality of it all, and that is not their perception. Their perception is this, that they now participate consciously, alive, aware, awakened in the divine extension. And that is what I say to you. Yes, I say to you, that is where I stand. And I say that is where you stand too. And that is where you stand too. I will not make any distinctions. I want no awe. I want no deep abiding respect. I want no oblations. I want no candles, no incense. I want nothing but one thing. You to claim your oneness with what I experience. That's all. That's all. There are no barriers. They are perceived as barriers from your side. There isn't even a side. There's only a film. You know, the fog rises off of the lake, and so the trees are obliterated. You can't quite see them. You know, the outline is there, but you can't quite make it out. How do I suggest you find out about those trees? I suggest you get in a boat, or you swim across the lake, and you go over and you stand in front of the tree, and you put your arm around that tree, and you say, "Hello, tree, I see you." I don't have to stand over there and wait for the lake to clear and the sun to shine and the clouds to disappear. They may never. You may drop dead before that happens. Don't wait for the divine to push away the fog on your lake. Get in the lake, swim across, and look at the tree. Do it! And quit sitting around and waiting for somebody else, because they'll never come. They're already here, and what good has it done you? It's here. You say, "I ask and it never happens, and I call out and nothing." I almost said an unacceptable word. But the answer is nonsense. Nonsense. The moving energies are so dynamically abounding. And you say, "Nothing's here. Nothing's here. Nothing's here. Nothing's here." Well, that's not the way I see it. Swim across. What do you think a seeker is? What do you think a finder is? Somebody who leaves the shore and says, "Okay, thanks all of you guys. You've brought me this far, but I see now there's no ferryman to take me across. I'm going to swim, and I'm going." If you guys want to sit here and make up ideas about what the tree might look like, if you're going to draw pictures of the tree, is it tall, is it short, is it green, is it orange, does it have leaves, does it have pine cones, what is it made up of, what makes it grow, what kind of soil does it come out of, fine. You go ahead and you draw these pictures seen darkly through this mist across this lake. But it seems to me the way to find out is to get in the lake and, no matter how cold it is, swim across and find out what that tree is all about. Now, if I told you a pot of gold was under that tree, you'd all go. Or some desire. Not all of you are gold. Gold is a metaphor, meaning desires. If I told you your greatest expectation, what might it be?
endless. Let's not go into them, but they're endless what one's expectation could be. If I told you that that is under that tree, then you would all leap in the water and swim across to find it. I tell you that it's yourself over there. Well, the water's very cold, and perhaps I better get in better shape, and I better refine my diet, and I better do a little more meditation, and, well, I better clear up my mental problems a little bit, and, well, then I also have all this work I have to do, and I really don't quite have time to swim across yet, but someday I'll have time. Well, maybe not. Maybe not. Do not be so filled with self-importance that you think you have endless time, my friends. Maybe not. And if I might swear a little, it would be a damn shame to have come this far and to die on the bank of that lake. Are there any other questions?
Bartholomew, looking at the forest across the haze to this lake, some of us might be enchanted with the beauty of that scene.
Yes, and many are. But I think you rarely find a sincere seeker that is really always pleased with that scene. I will grant you that many people on the earth plane are pleased with it, because they see that there's enough change in it to give them interest, you know. And their imagination is such that they can create worlds of fantasies out there, that will keep them interested, you know. So we'll go in a new business enterprise and it will be successful and so forth. And that's all part of that passing scene and the mist. And nothing is clearly enough defined, so you always have eternal hope that something beautiful will leap out. If you're a man, the most beautiful woman in the world will leap out of the greenery and throw herself at your feet, and how wonderful. Those of you who are mentally oriented, a genius will appear and bestow all the great wisdom of the world into your brain. If you're materially oriented, then a genie will present you all the riches of the world. If you long for emotional attachment, the most wonderful husband in the world will appear. Whatever. The forest contains, when seen from a distance, all the desires to be manifest. Dream on, my friends. Dream on. But dreaming on will not awaken you. It wasn't meant to. You expended a lot of energy to create the environment that you have now decided you would like to move out of. Make no mistake, you are invested in it because you created it. And that which you create, you are invested in. And I'm asking for a reversal now. And that is why, in the first movements of it, whether they take a few minutes or a few years or a few lifetimes, the first pushes against that old createdness that you have done require your own velocity. It's easy enough to say, turn your back and look up at the sun. I can say it. Can't you all say it? Well, do it. It's harder to do. The turning around, facing the winds as they come, as your body moves in a true orbit against the pull of the planet. That's what I'm asking for. You understand that, don't you? I'm asking you to turn around on a planet that's going in one way and put yourself in a different energy flow that's going the other way. These are not true words, but symbolically that's the best I can do for you. I'm asking you to turn yourself away from all of the bombardment that would like to keep you going in one direction. And that's why I say you can do nothing without building your power. Nothing. Nothing. And that's why no one can build it for you. It can be done.
Bartholomew, I would like to ask if I'm getting the right feeling. You're speaking of the mystery. One time I had an experience in the early spring of the year, walking through the woods, and the very first leaves were coming out in the trees. I was sat down to rest on an old log, and all the rotten dead leaves and bark and things were at my feet. And I felt that this so-called dead, rotten material was just a part of the whole process, just as important as those fresh, tiny green leaves. This,
And then when we're speaking of relationships and we feel that something's going bad or going wrong, if we have the courage to just follow any relationship to the very end, maybe it looks dead and gone, that's still alive too.
Precisely.
Is that what you're
well
saying?
Said. Well yes. said, my friend. You come sit here. Well said. Well said. You see, what is required for true seeing is whole seeing. And seeing things in their wholeness accepts the wholeness of things, which is the birth, the living, and the dying, and then the rebirth and the reliving and the dying. Any of you in relationships must have observed one thing, if you're at all awake to them, which is they have cycles. Relationships have cycles. If all those of you who are married kept at this high-pitched romantic cycle of, oh my goodness, you get nothing done. Your whole life spent at that pitch? It couldn't be done. It couldn't be done, and it would soon become very ordinary. The reason that it keeps continually being wonderful is because it dies down, and then the other parts of the relationship take form, and then again arises that peak feeling, and then it goes around and around. All right. I'm not asking you to abandon your relationships, believe me. I am not asking that. For those of you who have accused me of that, I would like to say, please don't misidentify my statements. I'm not asking anyone to leave anyone. It is totally irrelevant to me whether you stay with someone or pick another one, because the illusion there are ones is just not my perception. So, what I do say is this. If you are embarked on a deep relationship, be it friendship, be it lovers, be it parent and children, friends, whatever you're embarked on, you will be utterly foolish to assume that things are going to fall outside of the naturalness of life. Look around you. Are all those flowers always at full bloom? As a gardener, what a bore that would be for the good doctor. If his plants grew and then stayed the same, good heavens, he'd have to buy up the whole township of Socorro, is that the name? Whole township of Socorro to make new gardens because the others had already bloomed and had stayed where they are. He'd have to make new gardens. Foolish. Never would it occur to him to do such a thing. The wonder of the garden is it begins, it grows, it fulfills itself, and it dies. And that is the wonder of things. And if you want to get in touch with your own wonder, begin to get in touch with the wonder that is around you. As the woman speaks of here, about the rots and the leaves and so forth, please, an intellectual is outside of the wonder because the mental forms of ideas do not contain the naturalness that reflects the wonder of the world. Have I made that clear? Have I made that clear?
It's clear to me.
Again, I have nothing against the intellectual mind. No, it's wonderful. Play with it, do whatever you want with it. I don't care. But this I will tell you. If you are seeking the natural way, do not go to the intellect, because the intellect does not reflect the naturalness of things. If you want to learn, learn from the world. I told you, the world is simple. Learn from it. You learn from it. Up here, why are you up here? Instead of encased in a little building, because you can learn from this. There's not much you can learn from four walls. Those of you who have four walls, go outside. At least go out and sit in the green. At least do that much. Or get yourself in your vehicle and travel so that you have something more natural. You see, you're pushing against so many things. It can be done. But help yourself by getting out and into the natural and watch. Just watch. You don't hear the carrot crying because it's time to be eaten and transformed. You don't hear it screaming out. Even if you could hear it, you wouldn't. You know, another thing, I seem to be on a rampage this morning, but one thing that I do not approve of the human being doing is attributing to plants human emotions. They have emotions, and you mistranslate them and say that they weep and they cry and they do all these things, and that if you eat a vegetable, it has a certain reluctance to its death and so forth. My friends, you are out of your realm of understanding. Do not try to project all of your neuroses, not only on each other and on the gods, but also on the plant kingdom. Keep your neuroses to yourselves, please.
A carrot, when it has reached the ultimate of carrothood, is absolutely delighted when it sees its transformation, and it comes in many ways. An animal can come and devour it, wonderful. A human can come and devour it, equally wonderful. Or it can stay in its place and rot and become part of the ground, wonderful. It is your neuroses that is afraid of disintegration, that it is afraid of the ultimate breakup that projects on them. Please, don't do that. You say to me, what about the animal kingdom? Doesn't it hurt them? And I will tell you this. In the day of that you live in today, there is no doubt that the animal kingdom stands in deadly fear of the human race. But this was not the case. In the old days, in this land that you abide in, there was this wonder of both growing up, knowing that their destinies were interlinked in a wonder of helping each other, the animal kingdom and the kingdom of man. And the Indian knew and gave due reverence and total respect and guarded the rights of the animals, even extending past their own rights. They personified in them the highest forces. They did all of these things to become one with and incorporate. And so when life was taken in order to sustain their body, it was done rarely, rarely, and with deep gratitude and deep ritual and deep meaning. And the whole thing was transformed into a wonderful act of co-acceptance and co-joy. That is not the fact now. Those days have passed. But you see, you haven't done the same thing to the vegetable kingdom. The one thing that you have done to the vegetable kingdom is to try to transform them in the way that you decide they should be transformed. By that I mean a great deal of interbreeding so that you will have a larger this and a larger that and so forth, and forcing elements together that do not naturally go together and so on to please your palate. Fine. I again say man would learn far more from simply watching, accepting, and participating in what is already offered than trying to extend their mutations into other worlds. You know, you take the dog kingdom. Have you seen what you have done to the dog kingdom? Perfectly wonderful, strong, dynamic, creative strains, and bred them again and again against their own natural inclinations. Do you think that one dog says, I can't have an intercourse with that dog because it happens to be a, what is a dog's name, breed?
German Shepherd.
A German Shepherd, because I am a
Cocker Spaniel.
Cocker Spaniel. I can't do that. I can't do that, obviously. I can't do that. Do the dogs, do you find them doing this? Do you find them rejecting each other because they don't come from the right strain? What are you doing? And yet you take the strains and breed them together, 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 until you have what is called an effete, is that the word? An effete animal that is no more like a dog. It has become some kind of a human projection of perfection, which means that it is no longer able to participate in the vastness of its own choice, but you will select its mate. And then the same kind of mate again and again. Don't you think dogs like a little variety? I'm speaking frankly. I feel these are travesties, and you do them in the name of what? Because you want to have within your home a $1,000 animal that you can say has a, what is this called?
The pedigree.
Pedigree that goes back to the whatever. My friends. Which dogs are emulated? Why? The ones that have their tensions and emotions and so wired that they are practically on the verge. You just look at them with your eyes in a cross position and they whimper. And they hide under beds, and they are afraid, and they do this, and they, the boldness has gone out because you have refined it. You have made selection. What is this, friends? What is this? It's the travesty of man, and well, you know it. Everywhere you go, you are king. You will decide. You will control so that you can have this object, and others will say, oh, is that a
Irish Setter?
How wonderful! How much did it cost you? Oh, it must come from a line of whatever. What? Foolishness. Utter foolishness. And the dog at the lowest end of the scale is the one that has had as many relationships in as most spontaneous a way as it possibly could, and enjoys the freedom to be what it is, to be its dogness, but nobody wants those. I mean, after all, they're not worth anything, are they? They're just natural. So, I'm sure that's not of much interest, but I felt I had to say it, because sometimes I become a little, what would be a tactful word, I become a little, I become something.
No,
we'll drop it. I just think you should be more aware, that's all, of the travesties that humans perpetuate on each other and on all the kingdoms around them. So are there more deep and meaningful questions?
Well, I have a question. You said at the beginning of the tape that the path can degenerate into a stale mentalization or intellectual path. You said it could also degenerate into an emotional approach. What do you mean by that?
Well, you see, one of the great difficulties of the so-called spiritual path is to confuse it with an emotional overreaction. You know, you have an emotional body, you have a mental body, and then you have the vast participating body of undulating oneness. Yes, you were going to say
no.
And people get confused, because when the emotional body starts to vibrate, because it tends to have its focus rather in the same area as the true light body of love and so forth, they tend, you know, it's pretty much the same, you know. And they get confused. And besides, you see, at that point, they throw up a lot of whitewash and start saying that this feeling that they're having is really love and so forth. And I feel this is one of the greatest obstacles, because an intellectual really knows he's an intellectual. You cannot fool yourself. Other people tell you it. You know it yourself. But the person who is emotionally oriented rather than dynamically, divinely oriented can fool you for a lot longer. And fool themselves for a lot longer, which is even more dangerous. By that I mean they will have such things as statements like this: but I love you so much that I know what's right for you, and therefore I'm going to make sure that you do it. And it's love. Because I know what's right for you. I do. How do you know? Well, because I love you so much. I would be a little suspicious of someone that loved you so much that they knew what was right for you. I would be a little suspicious of anyone who knows what's right for you, however they devise that knowledge. There is only one source that can tell you what's right for you, and that is your own inner wisdom, your own intuitive response. That is the only focus that you can rely on. All others are only projections and tend to have great manipulation behind them. All right. Many people feel that they're in love because they have an emotional response. And in your world, emotion and love are the same thing. And this is why I say, I keep calling you on this one, because I think it needs to be called on again and again. The feeling that you have, if it's in any way special, specialized, focused on one person, rather than a coming out and a radiating out, is only your emotional body having a wonderful time of spontaneous generation of energy. And it feels wonderful. I'm not denying that. Of course it feels wonderful to be in love. Oh my, how wonderful. But the problem, of course, is this. You cannot keep that generating energy going unless you put a great deal of effort behind it and continue building it and building it and building it. And the trouble with emotional energy, my friend, is this. One hallmark is this. Emotional energy is possessive. I repeat, emotional energy is possessive. And if the feeling that you have for anyone, an animal or a person or a child or a friend or a whatever, has any degree of possession in it, it is not what I would call love. To possess something is to kill it. Take one of those flowers and possess it. Put it in a pot. Bring it inside. Put it on your dresser. Don't let the sunlight in. Don't let anything touch it. It's mine. Don't water it, because that's not you. Don't want an outside source to feed this, so you can't have water. No sun, no. Only me beaming my love on this plant is going to keep it alive. I doubt it. Put it in a dark room and say, only I will feed it. This is an analogy I would like you to think about. And this is what possessive love says. It says, I am going to take my love and put it in a closet, and I'm going to shut the door, and I'm not going to let anything else feed it. Me. I'm going to feed it. Let's not let other people feed it. Let's not open the door and let the sun and the air and the light feed it. Oh, no, no. And I love this. Look how much I love this person. Aren't we having a wonderful time in this black closet all alone? Isn't it wonderful? And that is possessive love. Whether you have it for your husbands, your wives, your children, your animals, your, well, I don't know. That is possessive love. In a closet. And it's based on one idea. You are terrified that if something else nurtures it, it's not yours. Do you hear me? If something else nurtures it, it is not yours anymore. Because something else has given life to it. And this is where mothers have such problems. They are the ones to nurture the child, so therefore, blah, blah, I could go on infinitum. It's an old story, and it's all phony. The mother, who is the only one that nurtures the child, has effectively killed that child. They might as well go ahead and kill it, because the child's life will be stunted, unproductive, limited, if they are the only source that is allowed to feed the child. This is the hallmark of possessive love. So, look in your own life. How do you feel? Are you afraid that something else is going to sneak in and nurture? When you're not looking, oh, you have to watch. Then you have to stay there by the door, don't you? I mean, you know, while you're gone, somebody might open the door and slip a little water in that plant. You just never know, so you got to watch them. Make sure you know where they are, what they're doing, who they're seeing, what they say when they're there. Oh, let's go on and on and on. Who wants to be a plant in a black closet? And who in their right mind would call that love? And you do not find that insane? You do not find that insane? And yet, when you get down to the bare facts of relationship, we are talking about that kind of feeling. And then those of you who are a little more broad-minded, you'll let a few other people nurture your plant. But only those you approve of, those who do not threaten you. You know. But let's just not open the door and take the plant out and put it out on the mesa where anybody passing by can nurture it. Oh, no. Now we can't take a chance of that. Just be aware, please. Every human has this one part to them. Do not place this on someone else. It is the naturalness of the human condition to want to possess. Because you want to feel special. We must always return to square one. If that plant, if that person is dependent on you for nourishment, then what does this do for you? Are you not then very important? And how boring it is to only be one of a series of thousands of nurturings. My friends, as this man can tell you, it is so much more exciting to nurture everybody who comes into your life. In whatever way is appropriate, making no distinction, which is the hallmark of this. What is appropriate is done. And I salute you for that. So watch yourselves, because there is also the other side of the coin, which is those people that you do not wish to nurture. Can you relate to that statement? The other side of the coin is those people that you do not want to nurture. You don't want to be in a nurturing position with them. Maybe they bore you. Maybe they're not interesting. Maybe they're a problem. Maybe they're just troublesome. Maybe they're ugly. Maybe they smell. Maybe they don't take enough baths. I don't care. Name it. So, no, let's not nurture those. So you have the two extremes, and they are within you. Please be honest. To one extent or another, they are within you. I think I've gone on long enough this morning.
Bartholomew, when you're speaking of this emotional thing, I am thinking about it in relation to certain religions.
Oh, yes?
And when you spoke of getting to our center, now, do these people who get really emotionally involved in their Sunday worship time Are they getting to their center at all? What is happening there?
Oh, dear.
I'm sorry I brought it up.
I answer this question with great reservation.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It is a valid question. I salute the question. I just am a bit hesitant about answering, but I will do my best. In some cases, it is absolutely true that in those experiences they have touched upon, participating in, and are totally alive with the fire of divine extension. Absolutely. Absolutely. The problem is that many of them are not, and have mistaken, and get together and band together with this rousing motion of the emotional body, which then vibrates. They feel some response. You know, most people live dead all year. Or all week. And then one day a week they go and they are, a part of their being now vibrates. You know, someone who is intensely involved in life, who is living intensely, rarely finds themselves in those places. And the reason is that they are intensely involved in life. And therefore, they do not have to have this jolt in the arm on Sunday in order, or whatever day, Saturday, we won't make any specification here, in order to feel. Because they're feeling all the time. They feel one with people, they feel one with animals, they feel one with life, with their job, with the sky, with the wind, with the... They're alive. So why go into a room and shut yourself in to become alive when you were alive before you went in? That isn't necessary. But if you live a life that is always at status quo, always boring, always dead, then that day becomes the day. You rush in the door and you sit down and they begin, watch how they do it. They rev up the old machine and they get it going and they start slow and they get faster and faster, and pretty soon everyone is singing and their tears are down their faces and they're wonderfully participating and they are alive. And they go home and they feel tired. Because when that dies down, when the emotional body subsides, they become tired. Another hallmark, if I might throw these out, I hate to make definitive statements, but if I might put it in temporary parentheses here, one hallmark of true divine extension is that it does not tire you. It invigorates you. And each time you even think about it, you become invigorated again. Even though you cannot duplicate the phenomena, it enlivens you again, and yet again, and yet again. And you can find yourself doing more and more and more within the day because this has taken place. And this, of course, is why so many people do so well during the day when they have deep meditations. Because that aliveness then lasts for them hours and hours and hours, extending. And then they meditate before they sleep, because then again that goes hours and hours and hours into the sleep state. It's just a gimmick, just a way to rev up your own divine motor. But in answer to the question, I hope I've made it clear, we can make no blanket statements. Some of the most profoundly united servants of the one God exist in some of those churches. Absolutely. Absolutely. Would give their life, would give their all, and have done so again and again. And I have absolutely nothing but deep and abiding gratitude, awe, and respect. But then there are the others. So, that is, I think, all I would like to say. But I have gone on quite a long time this morning. I would like to thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
I'm grateful to all of you for all of the work you did on behalf of all of these people, and I know that they are grateful. And I assure you that I am grateful.